Live from the Mystery Shack, this is Derailed Trains of Thought. Welcome, everyone, to episode 132 of Derailed Trains of Thought, your premier podcast on storytelling
for the creator and the consumer.
My name is Timothy Deal.
My name is Nick Hayden.
And we are coming to you from a forest in the middle of Oregon and a very strange little museum of sorts.
It's very quirky. I enjoy it.
Yeah, it seems like this is up your alley based on what you've told me before.
Yeah.
Lots of weird odds and ends. They had a painting of a horse riding a horse, which is
that's
weird.
Different. Yeah. There's that rabbit with the horns that had a six-pack or something.
They have a lot of strange animal taxidermy here. Yeah. A lot of things with horns I didn't think had horns.
It's pretty fascinating.
Have you ever heard of a Thyclops before?
I had not, no. It must be in one of those sections of Homer I forgot.
Yeah, I guess so. So I'll give it to them. They have a very eclectic collection here, although don't bother the gift shop. Everything there seems to be way overpriced.
Oh, okay.
So just FYI.
Man, if only the podcast would give us money.
That would be nice.
Money. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like the podcast sends us on all these adventures, but doesn't necessarily bankroll them.
Or if we have money, sometimes the wrong currency.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. We think we're gonna need francs and we wind up in Australia for some reason.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work. But oh well, thanks anyway, podcast. We do get to go to a lot of interesting places because we do this thing.
Yes, it's very nice. We never know if it's going to be a safe, interesting place.
True. I think this place, I mean, there are plenty of tourists here. I think it seems safe, although there's weird stuff in that forest out there.
Yeah, we'll stay inside. Dark forests are never good.
Yeah, strange gravity anomalies, and I'm not sure what else is going on out there. I heard some high-pitched voices and stuff. Yeah, we'll stay here inside the Mystery Shack. I'm sure it'll be much safer. Anyway, we are approaching the end of summer. I guess technically you are back in school.
Yes. As we record, I've been in school for 2 days.
Two whole days.
Exactly.
Wow.
Time for a vacation. No.
Well, I just got back from a vacation. I was in Washington, not too far from here, technically.
So you just went back to where you were?
Yeah, the Northwest.
If we control this, you won't have to pay for plane tickets at all.
Well, yeah. The podcast seems to have its own agenda.
Very fickle.
It is. But anyway, but we had a good time. Me and my wife, Janelle, had a good time in Washington. We spent about 4 days hiking around Mount Rainier. It was a very active vacation, as you can tell. We visited Seattle, got to go up the Space Needle.
Nice.
And we explored my wife's, we used to be a hometown. She spent some of her middle and high school years there. She took me on a little tour, shared memories, both good and bad, about that period of her life. Overall, it was a fun trip.
Very nice.
I know you're back at school now, but did you have a good summer?
It was a good summer. Yes, it was a very good summer.
I don't remember if we talked last time about if you did any travels of your own.
At some point we talked about it. That was back in June. I went to North Carolina, so we probably talked about it. Maybe.
Probably. Possibly. Anyway, you had North Carolina. Beach vacation.
Yep, kids are off doing things. Fio's in soccer. Strange's doing new dance things. Mercy wants to start to soccer at the end of this month. So.
Wow, okay. Yep. Before we dive into story school, folks, we thought we'd do a little bit of house cleaning because, you know, we've been doing this podcast for over 130 episodes, over 10 years. I think we're getting close to the 12-year mark.
That's crazy.
Which is crazy. And we realized that a lot of our story school topics, we've been more and more getting into things that touching on stuff that we touched on in previous episodes. And we used to have we still have a segment called Previously On. We're not going to completely get rid of that segment. But we are kind of retooling it in our minds. When we do a Previously On, we think it's going to be more of like something recent so that we just talked on and forgot to mention.
Like last episode, like, you know, it was like, oh man, I meant to say last episode, this thing.
Yeah, something much more recent. That being said, I think for this episode of Story School, we're going to revisit an old topic, but I think we have a special angle on it.
Yeah.
So even if it's some familiar ground, hopefully it'll be new. And honestly, this was an old topic. So
yeah, it's like 10 years old.
Yeah. So, and honestly, those first, I don't know, 50 episodes, the sound quality is kind of, anyway, so I don't blame you if you don't want to go back to that.
Yes.
So anyway, with all that said, let's do Story School. So the old old topic that we're coming back to here is comedy.
But you have a special angle that made you like, I have to talk about this.
Well, yes, I thought it'd be interesting to talk about kind of the dark side of comedy. Comedy that has a bit of an edge. Mm-hmm. And we talked about in our previous episode on comedy, which is episode 19, 11 years ago when we did that. But we touched on how sometimes people talk about comedy as if it's something that's always comes at the expense of something else.
Yes.
Which struck me as kind of a negative way to approach comedy. The idea that comedy is constantly tearing down something. Mm-hmm. I mean, the argument, I really prefer it when comedy is lifting up. It makes you feel better. Now, granted, I'm a big brother. I love teasing my little sisters. Sometimes I tease my own wife.
How dare you? How do you get away?
In a spirit of love and respect, you know, you nothing wrong with, you know, kind of a quick scare or something like that. So sometimes when we say we are getting a laugh, we don't really mean at someone's expense, but there's kind of you're poking holes in someone's pride. Or
yeah, I guess I want to push back a little bit against that. Comedy doesn't. Is always at the expense of something. I think you could say that, but it depends. What are you tearing down? Something good or something bad?
Sure.
Because I think there is a comedy that basically, for instance, like satire. Satire can go either way. Mm-hmm. Satire can tear down things that are like, yeah, that needs to be torn to shreds. Like the emperor has no clothes sort of thing. Uh-huh. Or you can tear down stuff that like you're making fun of something that has a lot of worth and you're just trying to belittle it.
Mm-hmm. Get a cheap laugh out of it.
So I think somewhere at the heart of this is this idea of, does comedy treasure something?
Yeah.
Is there something it cares about?
Yeah, I think comedy should be life-affirming in some way. I mean, that's where we're going to wind up coming down here on this. I guess this is my thesis statement.
Yeah, and then we'll explore it.
Yeah, then we'll explore. Again, we're going to dig into some of the edge. And again, I don't think comedy necessarily and humor necessarily can't have an edge. I've thought of some interesting examples of dark humor that are even in the Bible.
Yeah.
So I think there may be a purpose to it, but overall, I think you need to have that foundation of we want to have life-affirming, truth-affirming, good-affirming humor.
So if you had to define edge in this case, how would you define comedy with an edge?
Well,
some sharp comedy is hilarious.
Yeah.
So is that the same thing, or do you have a particular definition in mind?
Well, I have a couple definitions in mind that kind of have a descending in scale of darkness, I would say. But maybe we'll find more categories in this as we kind of dissect some of this. On the top level is sarcasm, snark, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That's your baseline cutting edge. You know, that's your Groucho quips. Groucho Marx was a guy who would like to pick at people joking that someone's full of hot air, that kind of thing.
So I guess because that's your first level, are there good versions of that? I mean, like, is Groucho Marx, is that funny?
I think it can be. Now, again, so we get involved in this when we recently discussed a Marx Brothers movie for a podcast that we'll talk about in a little bit toward the end of this episode. So stay tuned. But there is something about comedy that has to have a certain level of trust, I feel. Mm-hmm. Trust and how seriously are you taking the situations in this comedic story?
I guess in some ways, comedy is still a relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it changes a lot. Like, if, say, a dad to their son is, you know, plain words, like, and Fiona and I do all the time, is the point in the relationship to belittle, to make fun, or is it to enjoy words? Mm. Because I think sometimes Groucho Marx is just, it's funny because you're playing with the words, not because you're actually hurting the guy.
Right,
and so I think that where the direction is in the relationship matters, because I think two people can say the same thing, and one time it's mean.
Right.
And one time it's just like, ha-ha, is a dad joke.
Yeah. or like, even if it's not a pun, it could be, you know, I think guy humor tends to be this way a lot. Yeah. Like sometimes we really like kind of poking each other's things, you know. I'll make, even in our small group, I'll make a joke sometimes about crazy Lutherans and their transubstantiation. And I think that doctrine stuff, I think, is ridiculous, but I'll say it because Nick is a Lutheran.
Exactly.
So it's funny. We like there's a mutual respect there, but we can still like kind of,
like, this is ridiculous or what? Well, and that's, you know, I've only been in school 2 days, but I have some of the students I had last year. I have eighth grade for my homeroom this year. But the trick is trying to find that line for these guys. Like, where is it them just being middle school guys enjoying, you know, being kind of what might be mean but isn't? And when is it mean?
Yeah.
And how, as a teacher, do I, you know, you don't want to just, like, stomp out all frivolity.
Sure.
But so that's the whole thing I'm actually thinking about right now, is that where's that line? Because some people cross it a lot. Like, they'll start like, I was just joking.
Yeah. It's like, haha, just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except, are they really?
Yeah. And then it depends on how they see it. Like, the one guy might actually just say, well, I've always done that. But the other guy's having a bad day and felt attacked.
Sure.
Middle schoolers, you know, are just insecure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's an interesting one, just because it really is based on both intent and relationship.
Right.
And again, it's even in a, say in a movie, you don't get that sort of snark quite the same in a book. I mean, you can have some snarky characters in books.
Yeah.
And usually in a book, it's fun. Or even generally in, say, like a superhero movie, the snark is meant, it doesn't really come off, but I think it's meant to be that sort of camaraderie snark.
Yeah. I guess you could say that's relational?
Yeah.
Relational snark, in a sense. I think snark can also be relating to other things that aren't necessarily relational. And we talked, again, in the comedy episode that the best Riff Tracks episodes are when they get snarky for things that they're just having fun with.
Yeah.
Every now and then they would do a movie like, say, one of the Star Wars prequels where it feels like they were getting just a little bit more mean.
Yeah.
And it's not quite as much fun when it feels like, okay, the snark has become, where again, we're not talking about strictly a relational thing, but it's still become a little bit more mean-spirited when you're tearing down someone else's art.
And maybe, I mean, even then maybe it's relational instead of like how you relate to the movie. Are you making fun of it because like that's really campy?
Yeah.
Or is it like, they're stupid. Why are they talking like that?
Uh-huh.
You know, and then there's kind of just a level of, well, you know, there's certain people like, you love your B movies, you make fun of them, but you have a special fondness for them anyways.
Sure, sure.
And that's a different sort of humor than like, this thing should not exist and, you know, how dare it be here?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm not offended if you don't enjoy a movie that I found something enjoyable out of.
Yeah.
But like, when you start belittling anyone who actually enjoys that movie, then I'm like, okay, now hang on.
This might be a different level, but it might be the snark level sarcasm, but it might be a little lower, is that when you have someone, maybe you have a character in a movie or a book, and they make fun of it, but it's no longer, they're really just trying to say, this character is not worth, like, the comedy starts being, it's a bad character, so I'm trying to knock it down a level.
Uh-huh.
And people like the movie start getting hurt, like, why you, it's like they've refused to take the movie at the way it's being given.
Yes, that's a good illustration, actually. Another movie that we talked about recently on our other podcast, which we will talk about toward the end, but The Magnificent Ambersons was a movie that suffered greatly in one of its, due to one of its test screenings, because a lot of the audience saw it on St. Patrick's Day and was inebriated.
Yeah.
And it was not the type of movie they were prepared to watch. They were ready to watch something light and fun. And
that's not a light and fun movie.
No, it's a drama. And so the audience, some of the audience refused to accept it on its own terms and tore it to shreds because of that.
Well,
and that's doing a great disservice to what someone is trying to do. You know, sometimes it's a case where humor had a very destructive effect.
I feel this way sometimes when, you know, you see those things talking about, well, with Lord of the Rings. Well, why didn't the Eagles just take them to?
Yeah.
Like, if you're saying kind of tongue-in-cheek, the Eagles come, like, it might be funny, but they're just basically saying, this is a dumb book and why didn't they write it better? Which,
yeah.
And sometimes the how it should have ended feels that way, that show. Like sometimes it's just, oh, you're playing with the tropes, it's funny. But sometimes it feels like you just want to tear apart this whole thing that someone built and that a lot of people enjoy by basically taking it out of the context of the genre and the, like, there's a reason. I'm not going to get into the Tolkien, like, why the Eagles couldn't get there because Nazgul and whatever.
There are reasons.
But even if there wasn't reasons, the entire point of the novel is to have a journey to destroy something.
Right.
It might be a plot hole, but the humor sometimes comes off more like, no, oh, he should have thought of that, but more as like, this whole thing is not worth reading.
Yeah. I don't know if this YouTube channel is still around because it's not as big as it used to be, but there was one called Cinema Sins that would like go through and tick off all these like sometimes really nitpicky like points about like almost any popular movie.
Yeah.
And they would say, look, we're just being jerks. We really don't care that much about this. But sometimes that kind of attitude is like, look, who cares? It's just art. kind of translates into like, well, who cares about anything?
Yeah.
And which we'll get down.
We'll get to that level.
We'll get to that level in a minute. But sometimes that's when snark and sarcasm can tie into a more nihilistic mm-hmm. view of humor.
You're breaking down the foundation.
Yeah, you're breaking down the foundation. And nihilistic humor at its extreme is probably at the bottom of this dark mm-hmm. list that I'm making. So we'll talk more about that in a minute. But sarcasm, I think, can certainly feed into that.
Yes.
So speaking of snark in the Bible.
Yes.
So the example I thought of was Paul talking about those who were arguing about circumcision.
Oh, Galatians.
In Galatians. And Paul's arguing, no, you don't need this. But he says, as for those troublemakers, I wish they'd just go the whole way and emasculate themselves. Yeah. it's very stark, and it's humorous that way.
Well, I love when Elijah's with the prophet of Baal, he's like, yep. Where's your God? Is he going to the bathroom, maybe? Which is great. And again, in both those cases, the humor's there to basically tear down something that is completely false and basically anti-true God.
Yeah.
So this tearing down thing is not always bad.
Yeah, but where are you tearing down? Are you tearing down something good, or are you tearing down something that deserves to be torn down?
In that case, it's basically, we're so life-affirming, saying, like, that is not life-affirming and needs to be destroyed.
Yeah.
And that's how the humor's... And sometimes it does it more effectively. But we talked about that, I'm sure, in 19, some of the effectiveness of humor.
Yeah, probably. But it's just interesting to see some of these examples in the Bible. I guess you could even say some of Jesus's criticisms toward the Pharisees might go into some of this. Him like saying, like, look, they strain out a gnat but swallow a camel.
Yeah.
Like, you could hear it kind of a snarky tone in his voice. Well,
and I wonder, you know, I haven't thought of this before, but when he's doing the whole, like, you know, your whitewashed tombs, your... Mm-hmm. You find a convert, make him twice as fit for hell sort of thing.
Yeah.
I wonder if the common people around, they might just be loving it. I mean, it might be almost rabble-rousing sort of. I don't know if he meant, I was just curious how that was portrayed, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, it's a fair question. I mean, there's a number of those things that he said that sound very strange to us, that you wonder if we're meant to be more humorous for his audience.
Yeah.
Like, it's easier for...
Camel goes through an
camel to go through an eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Yeah. And like a camel going through an eye of a needle. That's how in the world that's even.
But pointing to like truth, like we've got to figure out what is true.
And it's an exaggeration.
Yeah.
So
which hold that we won't get into all the figurative language stuff.
Yeah. We touched on that a little bit in, what was that, episode 130?
Probably.
Not too long ago, anyway. But okay, so the next category I kind of want to talk about that's descending this level of dark humor is grave humor,
mm-hmm.
or gallows humor, as it's sometimes called. Now, this, I feel, has a certain effect. I mean, you can, in almost any story, you can have a joke about death,
and
you know, that kind of stuff. I know I currently work for a prosecutor's office. Yeah. I know people who deal with crime, cops, prosecutors. Mm-hmm. They see a lot of this dark stuff, and sometimes they just have to make a joke about it, not because they don't care about the victims or some of the situations, but they have to relieve the tension somewhere.
Yeah, and that sort of stuff seems to come up a lot, at least interpersonally, to relieve tension. Or even in, at least I remember in English class back in like junior year, we were reading Hamlet, and they make the whole point that in, I think it's Act 5, where he's talking to York, the skull, mm-hmm. like, and then the gravediggers come. And there's this whole comedy scene right in the middle of this super serious play, and there are gravediggers talking about death and stuff, and that was to relieve the tension of the rest of the play.
Mm, okay.
That Shakespeare set up.
Yeah, that makes sense. And again, I think you can see some of this in the Bible. I think in the book of Esther, you've got this building tension for a long time of Esther having to go confront her husband, the king, mm-hmm. at the possible threat of her life. And then meanwhile, Haman's making all his machinations. And then the downfall of Haman is like this comedy of like one thing after another going mm-hmm. wrong for him. It's almost like a, like, didn't you say that like if they did a play of Esther, like all the Jews would like boo and hiss?
I've been
Haman.
Told that. Yes. I don't know if it's true, but I've heard that they were supposed to, when they read out loud for, like it's Hanukkah, right? No, Purim. Sorry. Purim. Yeah. Wrong festival. That they would boo at Haman and they would cheer at Mordecai, I think. And, uh-huh. Yeah.
But like it's like the descending levels of like, oh, the king's mad at me. Oh, now he's really mad at me. Oh, now he's really ticked.
You know, there is a sort of comedy, and this is a different sort of comedy when the bad guy, the unrighteous person, where the person who's been doing injustice gets his comeuppance. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes it's just satisfying, but sometimes it's comedic. I read a commentary on Judges once.
Uh-huh. I was wondering if we were going to get to this. Are you thinking about Ehud?
Yeah, Ehud and Eglon. And the commentary basically said, it's supposed to be funny. Like, this whole, if you don't know, because this is not a super common
Bible story, yeah.
But Eglon's, the Bible says he's a very fat man. And then Ehud's sent by God to
assassinate him.
And there's all this thing with, you know, he says, I have a message for God for you. And then he stabs him in the belly.
Which is a great, like, action movie line. But.
And then the belly, he's so fat, like, it swallows a sword. And then he runs away in his, and then the king's servants are, like, waiting and waiting. Like, he must be going to the bathroom. There's a stench here. And it just, it's ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
And the commentary mentioned that he pulled some psalm in that talked about how God laughing over his enemies.
Mm.
Talking about this is an example of that sort of like triumphant humor, I guess, of things being made right.
Yeah.
And so that's an interesting, I think fully processed that till now, that there is a sense of humor that's like joyful because sin has been punished.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know in some contexts comes off wrong, be like, well, you know, we don't want anyone to be punished, whatever. But there is still should be something joyful about bad things being made right.
Yeah. I mean, that's in the Bible. I think it's hard for Christians to argue against that, given some of these examples.
But the dark side, though.
But yeah, the dark side is that, for one, if you're not in my brother-in-law, who is a prosecutor, I think encounters this sometimes when he will go into a kind of a dark territory, and none of us are in the frame of mind for that. And it just kind of comes off as like awkward. And
so again, it's almost contextual again in some ways.
Yeah. Or cultural in some ways.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I imagine, you know, in some cultures where death is a more commonplace thing than in modern America, you can do this sort of thing. I remember in one of the Scarlet Pimpernel things, I think the one by A&E, you know, it's the middle of the French Revolution.
Yeah.
And there's a part where like kids are running around doing the like ashes, ashes, we all fall down. And then there's like this kind of thing where like they're kind of wagging their heads around as if like, you know, their heads are getting cut off. Cause like a lot of people's heads were getting cut off during the revolution. And like that sounds horrible out of context, but like when you're in the middle of it, I don't know how do you deal with it? Sometimes humor is a good stress relief.
Yeah, guess what it does really is make this unspeakable thing speakable in some ways. French Revolution reminds me, in Tale of Two Cities, there's this guy, Jerry Cruncher. Is that his name? I think so. He's a gravedigger. He digs up bodies and steals stuff for scientists or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But he has this whole like nightmare dream where he thinks he's being chased by this coffin and this, and it's Dickens. So it's ridiculous and funny.
Okay.
But it's that sort of basically gallows humor all over again.
Uh-huh.
It seems like Dickens will do this sometimes in like some of the Christmas stuff. Like, it's dark, but it's sometimes it's just a juxtaposition. Something dark is given a light sense, like a coffin running after you is like this serious thing, this ridiculous thing.
Well, like Scrooge's line, there's more of gravy than of grave in you, is a pun. And like in the Muppet version, Statler and Waldorf, what a terrible pun. leave comedy to the bears, Ebenezer. Except that's a Dickens line.
Yeah.
It's not a Fozzie Bear line. It's a Dickens line.
So, since we've mentioned Lutheranism here, so there's a story.
What a transition.
I know. No, it reminds me, there's a story about Martin Luther saying, like, Satan hates being laughed at.
Mm.
So, like, it's better just make fun of him.
That's interesting.
And again, I wonder if that's sometimes, I don't think in all contexts would, I didn't think we'd talk so much about death this episode. Death and comedy, guys.
Yeah.
No, but I wonder if sometimes that it's this unspeakable thing, but also for a Christian, it's not.
Mm.
I mean, at least in the purest sense, it's not the final enemy anymore.
No, that's true.
I mean, it's we're all there now, not yet sort of stuff. But
sure, sure.
I don't know. I've not thought through that.
Well, this may be a side tangent, but I think in thinking about all this stuff this week, a thought struck me. You know, we often talk about how as we grow up, we lose some of the sense of wonder that we have about the world. I guess the flip side is that as we grow, we also lose a sense of the horror of the world.
Okay.
And I guess that you take that good and bad, but like, I remember when I was real, like 6 or 7, we were on vacation and we were watching cable TV or something, because that's what we often did on a summer vacation beach trip. And they were going to have a James Bond movie. I think it was A License to Kill.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I've heard of James Bond. I'd seen reference to it in Saturday morning cartoons. I was like, I kind of like to see it. I was like, mom was like, well, okay. But when we actually watched it, it terrified me, and not in like the normal way, like kids scared of monsters kind of stuff. Because I remember the aliens in Star Wars scared me, but that's a very different kind of way. I remember that the thing that terrified me was, I don't remember what happened. Like the villain threw a character into the sea and he got eaten by a shark or something. Yeah. You just saw like the blood splash against the porthole of the ship or something. I don't remember the details, but I think it was the terror of a real evil depicted in a way that I had never seen before. That was what scared me, and a more primal level. Now, as an adult, you know, you've seen depicted murders on TV all the time, and we're just more used to it.
And I guess in some ways, we have found ways not to take the deep evils of the world seriously.
Yeah.
Because you can't, I mean, it's painful to look at death and see it as real.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really real. You know, if you don't have to, you can't live like that.
Yeah.
I read the Death of Ivan Illovich by Tolstoy this summer. Great book, guys. If you have not read it, you need to read it. It was all about this guy coming, confronting his death and realized that most of his rest of his life was useless because he had been all caught up in this other stuff. And suddenly this reality of death was just staring him in the face. And it communicates in a powerful way that almost recaptured some of that horror that we try to avoid.
Yeah. And we sometimes numb it too much, granted, and then we get taken by surprise by death. And we don't want to numb it. You know, if someone gets too numb to it, that's super dangerous.
Wisdom is in the house of mourning.
Yeah, sorry, because...
I put Ecclesiastes in there.
But you don't ever to lose the sense that evil is wrong.
Yes.
It's fundamentally wrong. But, yes, that sharpness of it, I feel like it has to be muted at some point because, man, there's so much evil that goes on in the world, you can't handle it at such a high level of understanding, realization at all times. At least humans can't.
No.
So, that makes a lot of sense to me that sometimes we need to be able to laugh in the face of death to put it in its place.
Yeah, and I guess it seems like something Justin would say about laughing in the face of death, actually. But
I can see that.
I don't know a quote offhand, but I'm sure there is one.
Okay, so at the bottom of all this dark humor is what we referenced earlier, the nihilistic humor.
Yes.
And this is, in some ways, I think one of the more concerning things in modern America.
This is the troubling one.
This is a very troubling one, because I don't know that there's a redemptive value in nihilistic humor. Nihilistic humor is the idea of, like, this whole world is meaningless. We'll just laugh at it because what else are we going to do?
When they talk about like an absurd comedy, it's absurd not just because it's funny, because life has no meaning and it's absurd.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting for Godot is a play like that. I remember watching, again, I am not an expert. I watched one episode of Rick and Morty one time for a variety of reasons. That's not someone showing me. And it just came off as very like a sense of meaninglessness, but they were just making, you know, it's funny, I guess, because I think that people, I don't know. People take it seriously, feel that way, and want to make fun of the meaninglessness or the incongruity of life or the confusion of life. You know, it's like life makes no sense, so let's laugh at it as opposed to be depressed by it.
Which I guess is kind of a take on what we just said about laughing at death, but it feels more hollow to me.
Because here's the thing. There's nothing, like you said, life-affirming about it. When you're laughing at death, at least from our point of view, from a Christian point of view, you're also saying, but we know there's something else besides death.
Yeah.
There is an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to laugh at death if you think, I would think, and it's probably a little more nihilistic, if you don't think there's anything after.
Mm.
Like, you have to laugh at it because, what are you going to do?
Yeah, right. And this will come up even in shows that are for children, like Gravity Falls, I've noticed. So there's this villain called Bill Cipher in Gravity Falls that comes from this alternate dimension, and his whole goal is to, like, he wants to break into our dimension and basically cause chaos and mass mayhem and weirdness and just run ramshot over humanity. And again, it's one of these shows where there's a force of great evil, but there's not really a force of great good to counterbalance it, which I think is a big fault of a lot of post-Christian filmmaking, storytelling. But in Gravity Falls, kind of, you have this like backdrop of like, well, life is meaningless, but we have family.
Yes.
And family seems to be the, often in a lot of modern media, the antidote to all this.
It's family or love or something like that. It's not quite, it's not real. Well, like Love and Thunder in some ways. I mean, it's comedy, but if you push it too far, I mean, the bad guy, there's no meaning for the bad guy.
Yeah, I can see that.
But Thor has Jane and then other, you know, that pulls him out of the meaninglessness.
Well, I hadn't put that one together, but that's a good point.
So I think you're right, is that we don't have a good counterbalance to meaninglessness in a lot of modern storytelling. The best most storytelling has is this either like some sort of romantic love thing or family.
Yeah.
Which, again, is partially true, but it's not quite enough for most of the way it comes off in some shows.
Yeah. Even if it's unintentionally, the idea that it's like we're going on because we care for each other, just these two, the five people in this world just kind of hanging together. That's all we got.
A lot of post-apocalyptic stuff veers that way nowadays.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Like, I've been watching Doctor Who. We just finished season 4 with my kids, one of the older two.
The Donna season.
The Donna season. Donna, Dr. Donna, which is just...
That ending,
But anyways, it's very interesting. Russell T. Davies is an interesting writer, just because on one hand, I mean, he's a humanist. He's atheist, but he's a humanist, which means, one, there's no ultimate meaning, but there's a lot of meaning in the human spirit. And that's a counteracting balance. And I think in some ways, that's a more convincing one. I mean, Babylon 5 has that sense that, like, there's something inherently good in life.
Uh-huh. And we are all star stuff. Like, we have some inherent meaning because we've been made from the stars. That's a Babylon 5 sort of thing.
So I think that was a more like a 80s, 90s, early 2000s
sci-fi thing.
That this idea that we could, again, Doctor Who's funny. I mean, it's not primarily comedy.
Yeah.
But that tension is largely meaninglessness. But we have all this, there's so much adventure and wonder in the world. Like, there's still a lot of that going on. Like, we don't know everything. We can't, but it's great.
It's amazing. Because,
it's amazing. And that's Doctor Who. That's Babylon 5. That's, I'm sure, other things around that era.
Even
Stargate,
some of Gravity Falls, to be honest. Yeah, there's that family stuff, but there's also, like, all this cool, like, mysteries we can explore. So,
but I do think the nihilistic thing is, it's hard because then you watch some things, just like, you're laughing, but you're like, but it's just, at least I sense when I watch stuff like that, just this despair underneath, and it just kind of, ugh.
You know, it's funny, even in some artists I really admire, this will show up somewhat unexpectedly, like in Weird Al, you know, like in toward the end of Albuquerque, he says something like, and if it's someday you ever are racked with pain and self-doubt because of the torture of your meaningless existence, at least you could take a small bit of comfort and knowing that there's still a little place called Albuquerque. Anyway, a great song, but it's such a weird little moment toward the end of it. Yeah. It's like, is that funny? And every once in a while, like, and everything you know is wrong. There's, I think there's little hints of that sort of like, wait, where's this coming from, Al?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When you're attuned to it, you can sense it in various things.
Yeah.
And I think it's, unfortunately, I think it is more common than it probably was. I mean, it's always, I mean, okay, you know, Camus is quite old. Some of these writers, Ecclesiastes is quite old.
Oh, sure.
But that's not meaningless though. That one. Yeah, struggles with it.
Yeah, he says for a time everything is meaningless, but then later on he does find what a meaningful life can be. So,
what a wonderful life.
Yeah, and I would suggest if you, listener, have struggled with looking for that meaning too, try reading Book of Ecclesiastes all the way through and then read the rest of the Bible.
I love the book. Probably because, I think we said on here before, I'd be probably atheist existentialist if I was a Christian.
Mm.
But I think humor then, it has its dark side. So I think just as creators, we just need to be careful that what are we making fun of, and is it also building, is it backhandedly building something up?
Yeah.
For instance, I used to watch Simpsons. It's been a long time, but I was always pretty funny because it always seemed like it was defending something.
Hmm.
It was making fun of something, but usually it's something you should be making fun of.
Okay.
It did care about the family and learning and stuff like that. And I always felt like some of the successors had less things they cared about. We're just trying to make endless jokes by making fun of everything.
Now, sure.
That was my impression. I haven't watched like some of the Family Guys and stuff like that, but that was sort of my impression. Yeah. That it didn't no longer there was no longer anything, let's use the word sacred.
Yeah.
For humor to be good, I think something's got to be sacred.
Yeah, I concur with that. I remember trying to explain this to someone, a classmate, when I was in college. There was a silly Flash video that we would watch occasionally. It was very entertaining, like called the Ultimate Fight of Ultimate Destiny or something ridiculous like that. All these characters from lots of different genres coming together in a big fight, and it was entertaining. But the end of it had like everyone died except for Mr. Rogers in a bloodstained sweater, who was a sole survivor. And I was like, okay, that's where you've gone too far for me. Just because, like, for me, Mr. Rogers is in kind of that sacred space where I don't want to see that defiled. And, you know,
there's a certain amount of goodness you don't want defiled because there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the other moments are just, okay, silly. You know, at some point, Chuck Norris comes down and kicks Indiana Jones in the crotch.
Yeah.
Okay, that's just silly. But come on, at some point, have some respect.
And I suppose, you know, if you're going to do something, at least for me, I can only take like small bits of the, like, everything's funny.
Yeah.
I do a lot of most things are funny.
Right. But yeah, I think it really does come down to that. Is your humor life affirming?
Yeah.
Is it going to leave you more joyful? Is it going to leave your audience more joyful? Or is it just going to, let's ridicule this because it's fun?
Yeah. You know,
it's very easy to do a quick joke, but it reminds me of a character in beginning of Out of the Silent Planet.
Okay.
One of the bad guys basically was a classmate of the main character. And he observes that, like, early on as a classmate, he was amusing and amused a lot of people. But then at some point, his jokes and kind of snarky attitude grew very tiresome. And the main character outgrew it. And this guy kind of continued on that bent for at some point, sarcasm, that kind of snark just gets tiresome if it's not supported by joy.
I think meaning, or not meaning, sacredness, or let's say a certain amount of seriousness makes better humor.
Yeah.
That there's something serious in the world. Now, that is a Jesterton quote, something about something serious in the world, and then everything else becomes humorous or something.
Yeah.
But
or it could be a Lewis quote.
Either one, both, because they both, yeah. Well, I'm going to say both influence each other, but that's not true. But Jesterton influenced Lewis.
Yeah, for sure.
So.
Okay.
All right.
We've made our point.
Three more times.
All right. So with that, we will move on into soundtrack.
Dun, dun, dun.
Three, hit it.
Dark, you know, we're talking about dark comedy, edges. I know nothing about this game except what I see as advertised. So Cuphead is this game that's done in like a 1930s style.
30s animation style.
Which is, if you've seen, is kind of weird, and like they're doing all kinds of stuff, and
yeah. It
can be very fun, but it also deals with some sort of weird, dark, like weird creatures. Like, I think the devil's in Cuphead, and they make an exchange for the soul, but it's all in this funny sort of,
well, I mean, yeah,
laughy sort of way.
The 1930s style is like colorful, but also kind of off.
Yeah. So I couldn't find one Overclock Remix. I'm like, I was just looking around. I found this one from Dwelling of Duels called WB Bought Out MDHR in the 1940s. Okay, MDHR, I had to look up, were the people who made Cuphead.
Oh, okay.
So Cuphead's taking place technically in the 1930s. This is like moving into 1940s, I guess,
okay.
By Warner Brothers. And is remixed by Hat and Beret.
Okay. Those are two different characters or people?
Yes, actually.
Oh. Hat and Beret.
Yeah, Hat and Beret.
Okay, sounds like a good duo.
Yes. But anyways, it's a very Looney Tunes-esque sound. It's kind of all over the place, but it was fun and different. So hopefully you enjoy as well.
Thank you.
Welcome back, folks. Hope you enjoyed that very Nickian choice of a soundtrack.
Ba-dum-bum, ba-dum-bum.
It was fun.
Yeah. I don't know why I almost did like the I'm loving it song.
Were you trying to do like a... That's all, folks.
I don't know. I should have. I could do that.
Anyway, it's time to move on to our next segment for the day, Once Upon a Sentence. Okay, Nick, remind us, what was our sentence from last month's episode?
Our last month's sentence was, in the living room, the voice clock sang, tick-tock, 7 o'clock, time to get up, 7 o'clock, as if it were afraid that nobody would.
Now, I don't believe we received any responses from this. In fact, we had a couple people tell us that they were stumped on this one.
Yes.
So, good job.
And it's both from a famous short story and a collection of short stories that's famous.
Okay, so what was this from then?
It is from the book, The Martian Chronicles, and the short story, There Will Come Soft Rains by Ray Bradbury.
Ray Bradbury.
So. If you have not read There Will Come Soft Rains, you should. It's very good.
Is that the book with the automated house?
Yes, it's a short story. There's technically no quote-unquote characters. It's just an automated house, and... Yeah, I won't say much more because that's the whole plot, but yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
There's a very nice reading of this short story by Leonard Nimoy on YouTube that I used in my class once.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, his voice works quite well with it.
Nice. I can see that. Okay, well, here is your sentence for this month, for this month's episode. Here we go. If we was prisoners, it would, because then we'd have as many years as we wanted, and no hurry. And we wouldn't get but a few minutes to dig every day while they was changing watches. And so our hands wouldn't get blistered and we could keep it up right along, year in and year out, and do it right and the way it ought to be done.
Very nice.
All right.
I have a feeling that is The Stranger.
But that's your guess.
That's
for
my
all
guess
of
for
these.
Every. I'll be right one of these times.
One of these times we'll do Albert Camus. Yeah, yeah. I don't know about that. Anyway, so I'll let you hear it again. If we was prisoners, it would, because then we'd have as many years as we wanted, and no hurry, and we wouldn't get but a few minutes to dig every day while they was changing watches, and so our hands wouldn't get blistered, and we could keep it up right along, year in and year out, and do it right, and the way it ought to be done.
Very nice.
So there you go.
Good quote. Not sure I would have got it offhand, but I think it's a good quote.
Okay, well, it's from a very specific part of that story.
That story.
Now we will move on into our next segment of the day. Our take
on tales.
It is time for our annual summer movies review.
Yes, I never see many movies, but here we go.
Well, hey, we got this done in August this year. Like, it's actually really close to summer.
I know. Yeah, that's great.
I know. So, we get like it's in
October. Here's our summer movie review.
Or at least it's in a September episode, which comes out like right before October. So it's kind of embarrassing. But anyway, we may tie in a little TV with this.
Yes.
Because it just seems appropriate.
Nowadays, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously, yeah, this wasn't a big summer for movies for me personally.
Yeah.
But we will start as we always do with our superheroes.
Which is usually the main movies coming out in the summer nowadays.
Yeah, the Marvel ones. So anyway, first off, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which is the beginning of May.
Yeah, and I saw this after the fact on Disney Plus, but it's still the same thing.
Yeah, still, that works. So what did you think of this one?
I thought... It was a lot of plot and not much substance.
Hmm.
Meaning a lot of stuff happens. There's a lot of talk of multiverse and things like that. But in the end, the plot is very simple, which is basically Wanda's evil, but wants to save her kid, learns that, oh, she shouldn't be evil or she can't save her kid. And Doctor Strange does stuff. So that's kind of, okay, that's kind of flippant.
A little reductionist there,
yeah,
but
no,
I
so,
see your point.
But like visually... Fabulous visually.
Yeah, definitely a big thrill ride kind of a movie. It's like, whoa, and like, whoa, and then...
It does feel like the first Marvel movie that felt like...
I feel like that was the review by Crush.
Whoa. But it... I don't remember who Crush was. But it does seem like it's one of those movies that almost wanted you to know a lot more about the Marvel Universe than some of them have asked for.
I mean, this is the first one that was really very directly tied into one of the Disney Plus shows.
Yeah.
Specifically WandaVision.
With some What If bonus show.
Yeah, I don't think What If is quite as necessary, but it might help.
And I really felt America, that's her name, right? America Chavez, is that her?
I think so, yeah. The sidekick.
Yeah, I really just felt, I wanted her to be interesting.
Mm.
Because she was kind of just there as the MacGuffin. Everyone's
chasing after.
Chasing after, but come on, her powers are punch holes in the multiverse. Mm. She should be a cool character, but she didn't have a lot of stuff to do besides run away and not get caught.
Okay. Do you think that is a writing problem or an actor problem? Actress problem, however you want to say that.
I don't know that she has tons of opportunity. It could be, I mean, I didn't mind the actress, but it's been a while since I've seen it. Yeah. I wanted to like her, and I wanted, in some ways, I would love to have a little miniseries about her, because I think flopping through universe, if you're going to do a multiverse thing, I kind of dig just running around in them like sliders or something.
As a chase. Oh, and I see. And like just little vignettes kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting idea.
Or I remember, like I mentioned here, I read the whole Exiles saga back in the day, which is basically mutants, X-Men jumping between universes, fixing things. And I think that's cool. So.
Okay. I remember enjoying it, but walking away, not feeling like I could be very enthusiastic about it. I think for me, it was probably because it was kind of sad to see Wanda take the villain turn. We kind of thought for a long time that she was going to. And I can't decide if it was a good idea for it to happen so early in the movie. I mean, you'd had lead up to it because of WandaVision, but it was still kind of something like, oh, she's evil now. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I read something really interesting actually just today that apparently, according to the screenwriter of this movie, he said that they had been talking about using Wanda as a villain for like the next Avengers movie.
Oh, interesting.
So I don't know if that means that she was originally slated to be in this one. And he was like, oh, that's a great villain. Can I use her? If she was originally going to be working with Doctor Strange in here, it might have been interesting to see a little bit more, like another step in between, oh, I just had this one event in the town and, oh, I'm full-blown crazy.
Yeah, because I think actually as a villain, she's pretty interesting. I mean, pretty frightening. Like, she's super overpowered.
Sure, yeah.
But you're right. A step between might have been more satisfying.
Yeah, maybe.
And it was a little flip in my discussion, but it was one of those, it was fun to watch. But like you said, when you're done, you're like,
you don't feel like, oh, that was, I'm so happy with the way that kinda, you know, like, just kind of a sad feeling at
kinda,
the end.
It kind of happens, and it was kind of interesting, and then you just kind of like, it's a little forgettable, which is weird, because it has multiverse stuff going on, and it has Wanda being evil, and it has Professor X in, and Fantastic Four. And
I mean, this goes back to what I said about multiverses in a previous episode. You have all these other universes, but at the end of the day, you don't really care about them, because they're not your characters.
Now, if they treat them in a way that made us care about them, but there's not time, or they didn't try. I don't know what the issue is on that without analyzing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think the multiverses, which I think was billed as something interesting, actually in some ways detracted from the longevity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll be curious to see what they do with Loki season two, which was the kind of the, at least canonically, the start of all this multiverse madness.
And the multiverse in that one worked pretty decently well.
Yeah, it was. They did something very interesting with it. This one was like, we're just going to do a lot of tour stops in like other worlds, because like we can do wacky things. And it feels sometimes like a free ticket. And because it's free, it doesn't have as much payoff as they hope.
Or
it
weight
will.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah, or something. But anyway, I don't regret going to see it at all.
No, it was a fun watch, but like of the Marvel movies, that one, like, man, I need to go rewatch that thing.
Yeah. So the next Marvel movie was Thor, Love and Thunder.
Yes.
So I think I've also talked about how I liked Thor Ragnarok, but I also felt it was rather flippant toward what they'd been doing with Thor up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
This, I felt, was an improvement in that regard. Like, I really appreciated how they dealt with the consequences of everything that has happened with Thor up to this point.
Consequences are great stories, and we need, if you're going to do multi-series, deal with consequences. I think not everyone likes, let's say, for instance, Iron Man 3, but I think most people would say the one more interesting parts of it is Tony dealing with the fallout of, I guess, which Avengers?
The first Avengers movie. Yeah, for sure. And I will admit, I think it had some tonal issues early in. It took a while to find the right balance between that director, Taika Waititi, or however you say his name, likes the silliness stuff. He's the same guy who did Ragnarok. And I felt it had some balancing issues early on, trying to find the right balance between silly and serious in what was going on. But like after about the first third of the movie, I think I was on board with where they were going, and had some visual sequences that I loved.
Mm-hmm.
The place where they got captured for a little bit by the I don't remember what the guy's name is now, but like the
God Slayer.
The God Slayer, the God Butcher, I think they call
it. Oh, Butcher, yeah, I think you're right.
The Christian Bale, who was fantastic in this movie. He was like really, didn't occur to me, but like they brought Batman into this movie, made him as scary as possible, which seems appropriate.
And it's an interesting movie because like, though it's silly, and you're right, it kind of shifts all over the place, but it has a lot of weight to it too. Like thematically, it's richer in theme than I say Doctor Strange was, because it has Jane with cancer. It has, what's the place of religion? I mean, you may not agree with everything, but at least it's asking questions and taking them seriously.
Yeah.
And I think that adds a lot to the world, because I think we've seen enough Marvel, enough just superhero movies where just stuff happens. You want something to hang your hat on, I guess. And this one had a much stronger center of gravity, I guess, than...
Yeah. It's interesting.
Strange.
I'll be interested to see how this movie fares over time in public opinion. I remember it seemed like immediate response to Doctor Strange was, I don't know, a little bit mixed, but generally more positive. And this one, people were like, eh, it's not as, they didn't like it quite as much as Ragnarok, which I had my own reasons why. Yeah. I think it's a little bit better than Ragnarok. But what this movie doesn't have going for it that Ragnarok did was the new factor.
Yeah.
Ragnarok was a very new way of doing a Thor movie. This one, okay, we kind of know this director's approach to doing a Thor movie.
Yeah.
So it lost something in the kind of just the freshness, but I really appreciated, like I said, with where they went with the consequences of previous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, some beautiful shots there. Yeah. That climax is pretty fun too.
There's nothing else. Marvel movies know how to look good nowadays.
Yeah, that is true. Okay. So those were the superhero movies that we both watched, like the first episode of Ms. Marvel, the TV show.
Yeah.
And I hear
it got better.
I hear there. Yeah. But it's probably worth watching, but the first episode was a little rough because it felt a little overly familiar.
I guess. Yeah. When I say it got better, it's like stylistically, it was pretty interesting. Like I like the culture. I like the kind of the cool background things they do.
Mm-hmm.
Just the old trope of like, I'm going to hide from my parents. They don't understand me. I'm going to disobey. Like,
we've seen that so many times.
And it wasn't great to begin with.
Yeah, exactly.
But so, I've heard from various people that it's pretty good.
Yeah.
But I haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah, eventually. But anyway, before we go more into Disney Plus or TV stuff, another big theater movie this year was Top Gun Maverick.
Which I did not see, but everyone said I should have.
Now, I hear that it has come back to Strand this weekend.
Oh, really?
So that's your hometown theater.
Yeah.
That's what I heard through the grapevine. Yeah. Oh, grapevine. Ah, but you, oh man, you should try to make time because this is well worth seeing on the biggest screen if you at all could. What they did with this is impressive because I don't have a lot of attachment to the first Top Gun movie, to be honest. I think I've seen it like once and I was probably like junior high or high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking it was fine, but like I didn't have a big attachment to it. But what was fun about seeing this, two things. One, they really captured in a way that not many movies that deal on 80s nostalgia have a feeling like a modern version of an 80s movie.
Okay.
Not in the sense of like we're filming this and it takes place in the 80s like Stranger Things.
Yeah.
But in the sense of this is taking place in modern day, but the storytelling beats and the stylistic choices feel rooted in an older time period.
Yeah.
That's neat. And of course, the other thing is the aerial fights, the plane action is all fantastically shot. You know, for one thing, they're real planes. And so there's a feeling of authenticity. But also, it's very remarkable how they are able to choreograph in a way that makes it clear to the audience what is happening.
That's not easy to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's not easy to do for some directors handling just people fighting, but let alone doing planes where you're trying to show both the plane's movement and the reactions of the pilots inside, or at least the protagonist. Because it's interesting, you never actually see any of the antagonists in this movie.
Oh, interesting.
Like they never say what the nation that they're like doing this raid on, who it is.
Yeah.
They never even show all the pilots of the other planes are wearing masks and goggles. So there's no hint of what nationality they are, which is another thing that makes it feel kind of retro in a sense, in the sense of like, this is an American movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter who the bad guys are.
Yeah.
The matters is we're the good guys. So,
yeah.
Which I admire that. And there's a reason why this movie did gangbusters this summer.
People want that sort of stuff. They want like we said, with humor. They want life-affirming stuff. Mm-hmm. They want stuff that's fun and victorious and, yeah.
Yeah. Well worth all the attention I got. All right. Were there any other... I feel like those three were like the only movies I went and saw in the theater this summer, which is really sad. My theory, I don't know this for sure, but I have a theory that this was a summer where the backlog of the lack of filming new movies for, you know, because...
Yeah, COVID and things.
COVID pandemic stuff caught up to us this year.
So yeah.
That's my theory. I mean, I know there are other movies, but there just wasn't as much that appealed to me personally.
Yeah.
So I felt like a little bit of a short summer.
You had to, like, I didn't even feel compelled to go see Lightyear. And yeah. Everyone did was like, meh. So it didn't really help me want to go see it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which is a shame because I should want to go see it.
Yeah. But. The other movie I do have to talk about was one that was on Disney Plus, not in theaters. And that was the Chippendale Rescue Rangers movie.
Yes. I've not seen this, but I know you have opinions.
I have very conflicted feelings about this. I mean, this feels like an appropriate episode to talk about this, given our story school. I know there are some people who really liked it. And if Chippendale Rescue Rangers wasn't a cartoon that one of the ones I have very fond feelings from watching as a kid, maybe I would feel more similarly. For me, this felt like this movie could have been done with almost any 80s nostalgic property because for as much relevance as it had to the actual thing. I mean, they touched on, you know, you saw like actual memorabilia from Chip and Dale. If you don't know what this movie was, it's like they took Chip and Dale were basically actors in the original cartoon. And they're now like Hollywood has-beens and they go out on this caper thing to. And part of the story is so their co-star, Monterey Jack, has a cheese addiction and gets taken in because he gets in trouble with some cartoon mafia or something. This is in this weird Roger Rabbit world where live action and animation mix.
Okay.
And he's gone missing and they're afraid he's been kidnapped by these people who will kidnap cartoons and do animation surgery on them and force them to appear in knockoff films.
Okay.
Like offshore, overseas knockoff movies.
So like concept array sounds like it could either be funny or like what in the world?
Yeah. And for me, it was in a very what in the world. Now, some people probably, I guess here's my problem with the humor as presented. On one level, what I just described is ridiculous.
Yeah.
On the other level, they show the sequence of like Flounder from The Little Mermaid getting kidnapped and then like his mouth gets like erased and like replaced with some grotesque thing and it chips off. And there's kind of subtle allusions to like human trafficking involved in all this. And in this kind of this dark thing. And again, you could like look at that and it's like, oh, they're playing this ridiculous scenario, this dark way. That's really crazy. That's funny. But I'm like, I don't know how I'm supposed to take this. I compared this again. There's so much Roger Rabbit allusions to this. You could tell they were trying this. And don't get me wrong. The mix between animation and live action is very good. This is probably the best successor to that kind of hybrid movie that's been done so far. But in Roger Rabbit, the danger presented by Dip, the like stuff that would kill cartoons, was never played off as like silly. Like, no, that's real. Like,
yeah, like the threat is legitimately bad.
A legitimate threat. This one felt like they were trying to have it both ways.
Mm, and I think humor that tries to have it both ways, you're like, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, is this supposed to be silly or is this supposed to be like an actual threat? I don't know. It never landed on something for me. Like, again, the whole like balance of how serious are you trying to be with this? I don't know. It didn't work for me. And plus, some of the other like things that they were doing with kind of adult humor, not in the sense of like, I don't remember that there was anything sexual, which I guess that's one thing this has over Roger Rabbit. Which I remember really offending my dad back in the day. He wouldn't let us watch Roger Rabbit when I was growing up. But the adult level stuff is like, again, this idea that Monterey Jack has this addiction to cheese, which is something from the cartoon. He would always kind of go crazy whenever he smelled it. But like they really play up at some point in their investigating, Chip and Dale go to like this kind of Main Streets, Disney Town kind of area, which is like all bright and cheery. And Dale's like, no. This is only like really bright and cheery because it's really the seedy underbelly of Toontown, essentially. And like they go down to this like this underground cheese and it's like an opium den kind of deal. Yeah. And it's like
I guess then the problem really is, it sounds like, is that you're taking something that has a currency of fun and adventure, and adding this sort of grimy layer of reality to it for laughs.
Yeah.
And that's weird.
Yeah. And maybe for some people, I mean, like, I think Greg enjoyed it more than I remember I told him about the trailer and he's like, that sounds terrible. And then he watched it and it's like, okay, it was actually funnier than I thought it was going to be. So maybe for some people, it gets right. It gets past the defenses and it's that kind of skewing of childhood stuff. But for me, again, if I wasn't as connected as I was to the source material, because again, that story I told you has nothing to do with with the original, can you imagine a Mickey Mouse cartoon where it's like, okay, Mickey is just an actor. He doesn't actually, he never actually did. Or I don't know. I can't think of another good example that was kind of a comparison to your childhood cartoon show. You could have done this with Care Bears. You could have done the exact same story with Care Bears or Darkwing Duck or Transformers. They were all just actors. They weren't real. They were just in Hollywood business.
Yeah.
You could have done this almost any nostalgic property, the same story, and which really makes me sad because that means it's really muddled the brand at this point, as opposed to doing what they did with DuckTales, where it was a modern version of it, but it was a very faithful to the heart of what DuckTales and honestly what Disney afternoon shows were.
It had a sacredness about the original DuckTales, and this one didn't, at least what you're telling me, doesn't have any care about Chip and Dale.
Yeah.
I mean, as a franchise.
This is my perspective. Some people may say it has a lot of respect for it because, they did bring some. I don't know why they did bring all the original voice actors back. Chip and Dale themselves are voiced by, Hollywood comedians. I don't know what that's all about. Even the creator of the original Rescue Rangers shows, okay, look, if you always only kept Chip and Dale the same as always, they wouldn't have been crime fighters. They would have still been antagonizing Donald Duck in the park.
Yeah.
They would have just been chipmunks. It's like, okay, fair. Yes, you take them in new directions. But if you're going to do a reboot, have some actual semblance to what the original story was.
Yeah.
That's my whole thing. But anyway, long tangent of my very conflicted feelings. I mean, there were a couple moments that got me. There were genuine laugh out loud moments. And I did think the animation was impressive, but I had a lot of other thoughts. Anyway, that's that. The one last TV show I wanted to talk about from Disney Plus, the Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, yeah. I guess that we haven't talked about that yet.
We haven't. So I'll admit, this was a story I had wanted to see ever since I was 12.
Yeah.
I always was curious what Obi-Wan Kenobi did while he was waiting for Luke to grow up. Mm-hmm. And so this, as long as the show was decent, it was going to satisfy me personally.
Yeah.
And I did enjoy it. I mean, there were some choices I may not have made myself, but I don't have any major complaints about it. But what did you think?
I don't know. It's been a while now. I mean, I liked it, but it was a little on the... just liked it, I guess. Individual episodes or some things that I like, something I'm like, whatever. I didn't care about this story as much going into it as you did. There's some neat things. I don't know. I don't know if I have much to say about it. And I think that's kind of my thing, is that I don't know if I have much to say about it.
Okay.
And I don't know why. There's all sorts, we could go on a long time trying to figure out why, but it's not worth it. So it's like, I enjoyed it, but it was just sort of like, I enjoyed it, move on for me.
Interesting. So you didn't have strong opinions one way or the other about any of the characters or anything?
I did like Leia actually quite a bit. I mean, here's the thing. I think I told you when we were talking about right after the fact. Individually, all the characters I think were interesting, were well played, and Hugh McGregor's a great Obi-Wan. I mean, complaints about any of that. But for some reason, the total didn't work for me as well as individual pieces.
Okay.
And I couldn't tell you why exactly without spending 10 more minutes trying to talk it out.
Trying to analyze it.
Yeah.
That's fair. Reva as a villain didn't quite click for me until the fifth episode.
It took a little long, I think, is the problem. That I don't mind waiting the fifth episode to have the reveal, but you need to give us something that's a little more. She came off very one-dimensional.
Yeah.
Which you don't want to do that for two-thirds of your show.
Yeah.
If that's your main villain.
Mm-hmm. I think she had good motivation, but it really needed that fifth episode, at least for me, to unpack and feel. In part because there's a very specific way that we're used to thinking about Sith.
Yeah.
And she didn't feel like a Sith at this point. And granted, I guess some people will say, okay, well, there are only two Siths. There's the Master and the Apprentice. Yeah. Okay, yes, but honestly, most dark side users
have some elements of it.
Have some similar elements of Sith. Yeah. It's easier just to call them Sith as a generalization. And yeah, I wasn't picking that up from her. But then, again, for me, the fifth episode contextualized a lot of who she was and how she came to be where she was.
Yeah. That helped a lot with her character. I mean, all the worlds were nice.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the extra characters they had were like the lady who was undercover as Imperial agent. She was interesting, and the fake Jedi yeah. guy.
It was very interesting to see some of the universe in this period yeah. of Star Wars history, which you really have never seen in live action before.
And I would like to see more. Yeah, and again, I don't have quite as much connection with Obi-Wan outside the movies because I haven't watched much of Clone Wars.
Mm, yeah.
Which probably affects me somewhat too.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
But like, it's one of those things like, a lot of the pieces I really enjoyed, just somehow the way it gelled together didn't gel completely for me.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
Fair enough. All right. Well, anything else you're from this summer that you're dying to talk about?
No, can I do a quick plug for an old Disney thing?
Okay.
So, my family and I have been watching 5 Mile Creek Season 1 because Ooh. We have it on DVD. And uh-huh. I don't know why it's not on Disney Plus. It should be.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if that was a license thing.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know if they own the complete and total license, like they have to license it for Disney Channel and then home video or whatever.
But anyways, if you don't know, I think early 80s it came out. My wife grew up watching it. And so we, back in early marriage, bought the first season. Then we thought to show the kids. It's basically kind of like, well, it's in Australia. There's a coach line they're starting, and then there's 5 Mile Creek, which is like one of the stops where they eat and whatever.
It's like an Australian Western.
Yeah, basically. And it's fun for several reasons. First off, the characters are just fun.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, just that snapshot of like 80s TV, like it still has a lot of, first off, it's just run different, which is just interesting to watch for me, having seen different types of TV.
Mm.
But also, it's just like most of it's just very wholesome and old school, and it's fun. Like, my kids really enjoy it.
Nice.
Really good characters. I guess it's based on a Louis L'Amour book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but
I didn't know that.
Well, loosely. I think the Louis L'Amour book's based in America.
Oh.
But it's about this woman who has to run this way station for a coach line.
Oh, okay.
The book is, and then
so they...
And they just... It's the starting point, basically.
Gotcha.
But I just thought I'd throw it out that if you've never heard of it, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And the characters are great.
Yeah, I remember we used to like rent the VHS tapes from, I think, Scott's.
Okay. I remember you could do that.
Store. Yeah.
You know, Douglas Copeland and someone Netter. Anyways, two of the executive producers from Babylon 5 are on this show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Wild.
So, and it's about a way station for people going through. Anyway.
a little stretch there.
Yeah, it works. Anyways, I just wanted to doubt. We've really enjoyed it, and I don't know how many people have heard about it, so I just thought
cool.
I'd name drop it.
I think it is on DVD, even if it's not on Disney Plus, right?
Yeah. We have season one. I think there's 3 seasons,
but
we only have season one.
Oh, okay. There you go. Well, we want to wrap up with one last quick segment here today, a 3-segment show, sort of, or 3-second half. Anyway, this next segment will be Project Update. We'll touch real quickly on some personal projects, and then we'll talk about one that we've been teasing for a while.
Podcast update.
That's right. So, Nick, what have you been working on lately?
Not as much as I should, as per usual, but this summer I did finish. I keep calling it 100 Letters. It won't be its final name for a variety of reasons, but just a series of novellas that I envision, and who knows if I'll write very many. But I wrote the first one.
The first novella.
The first novella. The first letter, basically. Oh,
okay. Will each novella be just about one letter, or?
Oh, in my original conception, yeah, but then in my realistic conception, it would never end. So,
you'd have to write 100 of these things.
Yeah. But who knows? We'll cross that bridge when we get there. But just getting the first one done and having a framework, I mean, in some ways, like a prologue, it sets up a lot of act one stuff.
Sure.
So it was nice to get it done. It was first kind of longer project that I've done for a while. Got to look back at it and see if it worked. Because it feels different than some of my other stuff. It probably isn't, but just it came together different in my brain. So,
Cool. Well, I've looked forward to reading it at some point. My personal stuff, not a whole lot to report, I guess. I feel like last time we did this is when I had just finished
Darian Story,
the first draft, which since then, Natasha and you have read it and have given me some feedback. I have done some tweaking based on Natasha's notes. I need to look at yours again to see if there's more. I know I have one other beta reader I need to remind to actually read it. I don't know if he's listening to this or not, but I would like to have him read it sometime soon. So I've been working on other stuff, mainly for this podcast. Well, I should mention all the episodes. I need to get episode 131 on YouTube, but all the rest of them are all caught up in YouTube now.
Woo-hoo!
Of this podcast. I've not bothered trying to do Hijack.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's worth on YouTube.
Yeah, we'll see. I might not. But that was a big project this spring. I did do a little bit of brainstorming on the next chapters for the book that Darian's story begins. I need to come up with a name for this thing at some point.
Yeah.
So it's not just that, because that's not a complete title. But yes, stay tuned on that.
Nice. But now the big, here we go.
Okay. So we've been teasing about, we're doing this short form podcast for a while that's about movies.
Yes.
We have been recording that. This is one of the things, kind of like Weekly Hijack, where we record a whole bunch and then release them so we have a backlog. But in this case, we're working on a 10-episode season.
Yes.
Of our new movie podcast, which is called Let's Finally Watch This. So for those of you who have always meant to watch classic movies...
We'll do it for you.
We'll do it for you. And we'll let you know which ones are worth watching.
And why.
And why. It's going to be kind of a movie discussion podcast, but it's going to be a very different format from the Weekly Hijack, which where we discussed TV, gave our instant reactions to TV shows.
This is much more rooted in history. I mean, one of the kind of threads we want to pull in is that these things exist in a time period.
Yeah. And one of the great things about watching classic movies is that you connect to a previous part of time, that, you know, older movies just talk in a different way, mm-hmm. both visually and with the words they use. Yeah. As long as it's not a silent film, then they're not talking at all.
No.
But they have a different way of communicating. There's different things that were in the public zeitgeist at the time they came mm-hmm. out. So the way we're doing this is that every episode will take place from a different decade.
Yes.
Our test episode, which we did a test episode, which will be coming out, I should say, mid-September. So be on the lookout for that. That was the episode we did on A Trip to the Moon, which came out in 1902, over 120 years ago. And then our first main episode, regular episode, will begin sometime in early October. We'll let you know the exact dates once we know it. But that will be starting in 1922. So 100 years ago, we're going to do 10 episodes, each going, moving forward 10 years in time. And I'm thinking maybe we'll post the episode lists with all the movies that we'll cover on our Facebook page.
Yeah, that'd be good.
So be on the lookout for that.
It's been a fun trip so far.
It has been a fun trip. We'll talk about the history of the year in which a movie came out, and then we'll give you some basic details about the plot and the format of the movie.
And then why is it classic? Why do we care about this movie?
Exactly. Should be friendly for anyone who hasn't seen the movie to listen in and find out something. It'll be spoiler-free. We're not going to go into detailed analysis of like the ending and
Rosebud,
the secrets and all that kind of stuff. But I think it'll be a good time for all. So hope you're looking forward to that. In the meantime, if you wanted to catch up on some of our backlog of episodes, including episode 19, where we first talked about comedy and in much more general terms, you can find all of those episodes at our website, theoldtrainsofthought.com.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and we may show up occasionally or not. email us at derailedtrains@gmail.com. If you know the sentence, Once Upon a Sentence, please email us there or get a hold of us in some other way.
And remember, all our episodes are available. Also, if you don't want to just hunt through the archives, if you just want to subscribe, well, that's fine too. We're on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and Spotify and
YouTube.
And YouTube, that's right. And as well as...
Also, I think Overcast and some other places. I don't know, it just goes everywhere after you get to iTunes.
Okay. Thanks. You're really helpful in
advertising
those other venues or channels.
No one cares about them.
I guess. We hear all this stuff on everyone else's shows, but I feel like we gotta cover it too. Be professional here, Nick.
Yes, I'm very professional.
Okay, well, I guess I'll close out with my soundtrack. I picked out a song on Overclocked Remix from Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy Kong's Quest. This song is called Bavarian Cackle. This is kind of a polka remix of like some of the haunted stages from this game. So it's less taking an innocent story and making a humorous dark spin on it, and more like taking a dark music and putting a very humorous spin on it, which is kind of more my speed. So I appreciate that about it. And given that it's polka, I think Weird Al would approve.
Yes.
So this is remixed by General Grunt and Ridley Snipes.
Nice. Nice names.
They are good names. So I hope you enjoy. And Nick, I see this cranky old guy that's getting kind of ticked at us for not buying any of his souvenirs. I think it's time we probably better get going.
Let's get out of here.
So, okay. Sounds like a plan. Until next time, folks. This is Tim.
This is Nick.
Bye-bye.
Adios.